Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good to hear the music of my people starting the program.
Ain't no drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
608. Horns on the show provided by Bennett Cumberbatch. Is that his name? What's the name of the kid that works on the show?
Bennett Wake Night is our intro.
Why am I calling him Bennett Cumberbatch?
That's the award-winning actor.
Yes.
Does he work on the show?
He, sometimes.
Oh, wait, hold on. That's a good part right here.
Papa's got a brand new.
All right, what were you saying?
Yeah. Reminds me of Pulp Fiction. He makes an appearance on the show sometimes.
Oh, he does.
He does.
Hillary Clinton was on Jimmy Kimmel last night and was entertaining and likable. Two things she never is on the campaign trail. So, much like when she was on here talking about her grandkids, a grandkid at that point, grandkids soon after. She was very likable and she was mocking Trump. By the way, we never got to this yesterday. Trump took on Morning Joe and Mika Brzezinski. Morning Joe is on MSNBC every morning, and you can watch it if you want. You'll come back. but it's fine. You know, it is what it is. And those two, Joe Scarborough and Mika, were sucking up to Trump. And doing a bunch of interviews with him, and then suddenly things went south. And I think it was because Joe Scarborough thought he was on the short list to be vice president. And when he wasn't chosen or wasn't on the short list, then he got tough on Trump. So they've gotten progressively tougher and tougher on Trump, but I don't think unfairly.
No, I agree.
But again, I want you to picture Trump as the president of the United States when he is picked on by every reporter, every outlet, every blog for decisions he would make as president, and then taking the very valuable time in the president's day to stop down and have a Twitter fight.
Exactly, yeah.
So, and along with the Twitter fight, being presidential also means that you're above it. And regardless of what rumors you hear or cool rumors you think exist, you don't just throw them out on Twitter willy-nilly.
Mm-hmm.
Does willy-nilly work here?
Yeah, willy-nilly would work,
okay.
Especially with this.
No, willy-nilly work here. Does willy-nilly work here?
I haven't seen him.
Oh, okay, fine.
He's in sales.
Oh, well, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the tweets Trump threw out yesterday is Joe Scarborough and his girlfriend, Mika, because there's a rumor, like there is with any male-female combo that works in television or radio for that. I mean, you and I have been having a thing for years, obviously. Dave, you and I as well. But there's a rumor with anybody that works together. Mary won't return my calls. There's a rumor that anybody that works together that maybe there's a if there's any chemistry at all.
Well,
so Joe and Mika,
yeah.
I don't know if they're doing it. I don't really care, to be honest with you. But it's like going on and going, hey, Alison Rosati and Rob Parker? Rob Stafford? Who's Rob Parker?
You're thinking of Mike Parker.
Does Rob Parker work here?
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of, Dave.
Rob Stafford, obviously fooling around. Right?
No, they're not.
Yeah. Alan Krizhevsky and
Kathy
Brock, clearly fooling around. I mean, that's the kind of nonsense we're talking about.
Yeah.
So this is the type of stuff that Trump would need to avoid. You don't engage in it. You don't get involved in it. You giggle about it behind White House closed doors. Because what does it have to do with being president of the United States that you would throw out that Joe Scarborough and Mika are having an affair?
Right. And if they are, like you said.
It's none of my business.
Who cares? By the way, they rarely have presidential press conferences. I mean, they should have more. They should probably be a monthly. Can you imagine the presidential press conferences? They would
be that's the thing,
half
right?
an hour about gossip.
I'm saying Trump should shut up more. Well, Hillary needs to talk more.
Right.
Hillary hasn't had a press conference in 200 days. She's not answering any questions.
No, she's got to have some sort of an availability.
Yeah. So what's one of the ways you can deal with your opponent saying that you're about to die any minute now because of your incredible health problems is to hold a press conference and answer some questions and deal with it so the other lunatic doesn't get to make up stuff.
Yeah,
I notice I said the other lunatic, so I can save you a text. Here's Hillary on Clinton or on Kimmel last night.
Are you in good health?
Well, this has become one of their themes. Here, you take my pulse while I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Make sure I'm alive.
Oh my God, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Look at I think. It's, back in October, the National Enquirer said I would be dead in 6 months.
Oh, wow. Oh,
so with every breath I take, I feel like it's a...
You have a new lease on life.
Yeah, a new lease on life. I don't know why they are saying this. I think, on the one hand, it's part of the wacky strategy.
Uh-huh.
Just say all these crazy things, and maybe you can get some people to believe you. On the other hand, it just absolutely makes no sense. And I don't go around questioning Donald Trump's health. I mean, as far as I can tell, he's as healthy as a horse.
Well, his doctor said he had the best health medical examination he's ever seen in a human being.
Yeah, I saw that.
Can you open this jar of pickles? This has not been tampered with. This is...
The ultimate presidential test, the pickle jar opening, right?
I would argue she's actually in better health because I could never open a jar.
Well, and again, Donald Trump, the deflection strategy, right? Because here's a 70-year-old man that's eating buckets of KFC on Trump 1. This guy could drop dead of a heart attack any minute now. So let's not pretend he's an Olympian, unless he's the fat weightlifter guy that fell down when he was lifting the weights. It's campaign 2016. I continue to be surprised by it. And really, that's my fault, because why should I be? Got some more Hillary sound later on this. Coming up on 6:15, Mary will do your traffic. We got a kid of the week later this hour, as you said. 7 o'clock hour will focus on terrorism in the campaign. How much threat are you really under? And just heartbreaking, gut-wrenching video that comes out of Iraq yesterday of an 11-year-old boy whose father had strapped explosives to him. 11. He's 11. 11. Strapped explosives to him to go into a market-like area and blow himself up. His brother, who was 12 or 13, had killed himself in a different part of the same city. They were both dispatched, apparently, from Mosul. His father is some sort of officer with ISIS, who sent his 11 and then 12 or 13-year-old sons out to die. The 11-year-old was in such a state of panic, people came over. And he somehow communicated what was going on, and bomb squads were able to cut the bomb off him without detonating it, and he is now in some sort of protective custody so his father doesn't have him killed. That's the world we live in. In the 7 o'clock hour, we will take a look at the terrorist threat here, but also with a couple of experts on terrorism in general to talk about who may be better equipped to handle it.
What to see, what's out at the show, and to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochrane Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Nick DiGiulio joins us now. Still your favorite song, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Let's go in reverse order here, because we got to get to the main issue. And the main issue is you saw Pearl Jam 41 times.
not this weekend.
When are you doing the Fight Club screening?
It'll be September 6th. It's Tuesday, September 6th.
You're not going to reveal where, right? Because if people ask where it is, they can't know, right? It's like the Fight Club, the whole Fight Club thing.
You know, in this case, I'm going to break rule number one, and I'm going to tell you, so I want people to show up.
Oh, because I thought the first rule of your screenings was nobody gets to know where your screenings are.
Yeah, nobody talks about it, but I'm going to break that rule right now at the risk of getting a punch in the face from Brad Pitt. But
yes.
It's at the Movieco Theater in Rosemont on Tuesday, September 6th. It's digitally remastered. If you've never seen it on the big screen, it's pretty amazing. We'll talk about it. I'll introduce it. We'll talk about it afterwards. And if you've never seen it, it's an amazing film. One of the best movies David Fincher ever made. I think one of the best movies of the 90s. And I will, you know, normally I'll talk about the movie beforehand, you know, give some tidbits and some background and stuff. This one I'm going to be very brief, because the less you know about Fight Club, the movie, the more effective it is when you see it. And I'm very excited. This is one of my favorite films.
I haven't been to Jewel 41 times. We'll get to Pearl Jam in just a second. Kubo and the Two Strings, you really liked it?
Kubo and the Two Strings is one of the very best movies of the year. I really want to make sure people see it, because no one's going to see it. It made $92 million less than that mediocre Life, The Private Life of Pets, or whatever the hell that thing was called. It made $92 million less than that, and it is on another level of artistry. It's an extraordinary piece of work that is breathtakingly beautiful. The time, the effort, the artistry that was put into this movie is amazing. It's the best animated film of the year, one of the best movies of the year. Made me cry like a baby, and every frame of it is a work of art, and more people need to see it. It's called Kubo and the Two Strings. Take your kids to see this. Take your kids to see this. Don't take them to see Kevin Spacey as a cat. Take them to see Kubo and the Two Strings, a truly extraordinary and special movie. Yeah, everybody should see it.
Amy Cochran is with one of the kids she works with. It's part of working with kids with autism. They do a movie day. And yeah. So she sees every single animated film that comes out every week, week after week. She loved it. She was very surprised by it. I think you should actually talk to your friends in Hollywood. And then if I make an animated movie, it's going to be called The Best Animated Film Out This Weekend. Don't go see the other movie. I know it's a long title, but it kind of cuts through.
You know, in reality, though, they can't, you know, Focus Features releases the Leica movies. Leica is the studio that makes these movies, and they do the stop motion stuff. This is extraordinarily difficult and time consuming work. But Focus Features can't compete with the money that DreamWorks has, and that Disney has, and that Pixar and Fox has. They just can't compete. So the advertising budget is a lot less. So it's got to be word of mouth to get people to come out and see these movies. So Kubo and the Two Strings, it's called. It is one of the very best and most exquisitely beautiful films I've seen all year.
Maria Bamford, funny.
Oh, my God. Can I just give you her opening real quick?
I don't know. Can you? Because some of it's not clean.
Okay, no, I can't. Absolutely can't.
Okay.
For most people who don't know who Maria Bamford is, she's crazy. She's actually spent time in an institution, and her delivery is very weird. She's not your average comedian. She's not your average female comedian. She doesn't come out and go, I hate when my husband tells me not to shop. She doesn't do that kind of stuff.
No, she's like Emo Phillips in a blonde from Minnesota with hipper jokes.
That's a great way of describing it.
Yeah.
So she comes out, and let me just give you I'll run through the whole thing that she said. She comes out and she goes, to all the people who have never seen me before, who are here because of your friends or because of your friend dragged you here, I would like to apologize now. And then it gets better. And then she goes, I always like to think that, you love me. You wouldn't want to put me through something I would absolutely hate. And yes, I know that you love me. So yeah, I've done it too. And I love you. I know that you love me. And so I will go see that Spielberg movie. And then I saw War Horse.
Wow. It's like she did the bit for you.
I know. And then there's a pause and she goes, and as far as I can recollect, War Horse is a 14-hour documentary about a horse struggling to break free from barbed wire. And then, the capper is, this may be your war horse. That's how she opened the show.
So you get, and this is what you get at a Maria Bamford show. You get people that get it, that laugh hard, or you get people that are uncomfortable going, what the hell's going on up there?
It was it was so great because Kristen Decker was there, and we met up afterwards, and we were both just like, this woman is just a genius, and she's so funny. It was one of the strongest sets of comedy I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, she's a whack job, but she's very funny.
Yes.
And by the way, it's almost like going to see, who's Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly, you see Billy Connolly and he's hilarious, but it takes you 10 minutes to start to understand what he's saying. With Maria, you got to stay for the first 10 to 15 to go, what am I watching here if you've never seen it? And then you'll rock and roll with it. All right. Did you really see Pearl Jam for the 41st time?
I did Saturday night.
What in God's name could they be doing that you haven't seen before?
That's right. Yeah.
Is this your favorite band of all time?
No, actually it's not.
You've seen somebody more than 41 times?
Cheap Trick. I've seen Cheap Trick more than 41 times.
Good God, man. Stay in your apartment. Stop going out.
I've seen Dave Matthews 36 times. Yeah. But no, Pearl Jam, they've been around for 25 years. That's not... 41 times in 25 years is not crazy.
It is crazy.
I go to a ton of concerts. I can't think of anyone I've seen more than 10 times.
Yeah, I wouldn't go see me 41 times. How much have you spent on Pearl Jam?
Oh, I don't want to talk about that.
Why would I do? The average ticket price in 1991.
Yeah.
Average ticket price in 91 was what? Probably what, $50?
No. They played the Metro. The first time I saw them, they played the Metro in the spring of 91. The first album wasn't out yet, and they opened for Nirvana, and it was $12, I think.
All right, so let's say the first 10 concerts were $12. That's $120. Now they're famous. Concerts 10 through 20, what are you paying there? That's got to be 50.
In the 30s, I would imagine. No, because they, I don't know if you remember this, but in the mid-90s, they went to war with Ticketmaster because they thought the Ticketmaster prices were too high.
I'm going to shock you. I don't remember that. So that was a concert 10 through 20. Concerts 20 through 30, come on, you're 50 to 100 now.
50 to 75, maybe, yeah.
All right, so you're shortchanging me on the first. I'm going to go to 60. So that's 600. All right, we're at 1,000, and I'm rounding down. All right, and concerts 30 to 41, now we're premium price.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk. Honestly,
what'd you pay for the ticket Saturday?
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, you are. What'd you pay? All right, I'm being told by Sandberg that she paid $85 face.
I did not pay $85.
You paid more than that.
I paid a lot more than $85, yes.
Okay, so you went scalper.
StubHub is not scalping, actually.
Oh, yes, so illegal scalping. Let's say you spent $2,000. What else could you have done with the $2,000 that would have given you the same amount of joy?
I did not spend $2,000.
No, I mean total on the tickets through the years.
Okay. I thought you were just, because, you know, it's possible that somebody spent $2,000 for two tickets for Saturday's show. That's absolutely possible.
Yeah, it's possible. Homeland Security should keep an eye on them. So $2,000 on Pearl Jam tickets. What could you have done with that money?
You know what? Got some Pearl Jam bootlegs.
That's Nick.
Oh, my God.
He's on tonight. It's...
Wait, Nick, did you save all the ticket stubs? I'm just curious.
For what?
From the concert.
For what? So you can put a collage up so the police break in, they can see the candles in the corner?
I have all my ticket stubs. What do you do with them? Do you save yours?
I do not. No, I don't. I mean, I don't have them all.
Do you have a lock of Eddie Vedder's hair that you get every night?
Hey, listen, my most successful play was named after a Pearl Jam song, so there's a connection there.
Which play are we talking about?
It was called Alive, and it ran for 3.5 years.
Oh, yeah.
And it was,
I saw it. Listen, you and I have been friends forever, and I certainly don't want this to come between us the way the Great Heat controversy did. But the fact is, Bob Dylan called Eddie Vedder and said, people can't understand what you're singing.
Yeah. Bob Dylan made that call?
Yeah, Bob Dylan called Eddie Vedder and said,
unfortunately, Eddie Vedder didn't understand what he was saying, so he's still singing that way.
41 times. I'll tell you what, here's what I'll do. I will give you anything off the prize list if you can convince me you've seen an act more than 41 times. Okay? Other people. 312, the Texans. 312-981-7200.
You're going to regret that because I'm positive that there are some deadheads who listen to your show. You're going to regret that.
Except for deadheads. Deadheads can't play. 312-981-7200. That's the number. Back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Kid of the Week eventually will lead to Kid of the Year. Sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet, where a $5,000 prize courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch will combine to put up $5,000 for the Kid of the Year winner. See all the inventory at rayandraymonddeals.com. It's a great family business. And they do fine jobs at both dealerships, so please support them. Go online at wgnradio.com/contest to submit your entry. And Mary, would you explain how you and Dave select the Kid of the Year winner?
It's a very lengthy process. But we get sequestered in a room, and we go at it for hours.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that will make Nick's out of context. We get sequestered in a room and we go at it for hours. Yes.
That you guys are picking Kid of the Week. Forget it.
Yeah. So we would love to hear from you on any Kid of the Week submission and have you tell us what kid is special in your world, because it doesn't even have to be, and I think it's important for people to know, it doesn't even have to be somebody you know. It could be somebody you've heard about. Or it could be Kimberly. Let's go to Kimberly here and say good morning. Good morning, Kimberly.
Morning.
Kimberly Hahn?
Yep.
You are a Lang Lang Young Scholar. What does that mean?
It basically means that I'm one of seven other kids chosen in the U.S. and from Hong Kong that basically perform 4 to 6 weeks a year, either with Lang Lang or at important venues or concerts around the world.
Kind of showed my cultural talent there, didn't I? It's Lang Lang, not Lang Lang.
Yeah, Lang Lang, sorry.
Thank you for straightening me out.
Yeah.
Are these concerts that go around the world, have you already done a few of those?
Well, we just got selected as a new group this spring, so the first concert is actually this Sunday that we're performing together at Millennium Park in Chicago.
That's a pretty good start. Now, where else will you be going? Any idea?
No idea yet because we've just started, so I'll see.
That concert that you just spoke of is part of a week-long summer music festival.
Yep.
Young scholars and NYSC students placed in chamber music ensembles and performing along with maestro Dr. Alan Dennis. This is one of the this is the largest full curriculum nonprofit youth music ensemble program around, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I also play violin in their orchestra. So I've been with Dr. D and the Midwest Young Artists Conservatory for, I think, like 5 or 6 years now.
What do you consider your highest level of skill to be, on the piano or on the violin?
Definitely on the piano because I've been playing it longer. And also it's just something that I think is part of me more.
Do you have your violin near you?
I do.
Would you mind playing something? Just set the phone down and play something for us? I'll give you a minute. I'll give you a minute to get set up. I'll just give you a minute. It doesn't have to be much. We just want like 20, 30 seconds. That's all. We just want to, for those of us who can't be there Sunday, we just want to hear you play something.
Can I play piano instead?
Sure. I didn't know you were near a piano. Yeah, that'd be fun. All right, so we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. And Kimberly Hahn, it's Lang Lang, Dave. It's not Lang Lang.
Yeah.
God, Dave, I am such an idiot.
And it's not Maestro, it's Dr. D.
Yeah, it does sound cooler.
Yeah, it does.
It does sound definitely cooler, without a doubt. Well, you're Kid of the Week. We have great prizes for you, and we thank you for everything you're doing and for making me sound slightly more intelligent. But Kimberly, stand by. We'll come back in just a second and hear Kimberly play the piano because she's insisting on it. You heard her.
A lot
I think
of
it's
pressure.
The way she went, okay.
Okay. It's like our own private concert.
I don't even know that we got an okay. We really didn't even get an okay, did we?
You coerced her, but looking
well,
forward to it.
Well, this is important.
I want to hear her play, yeah.
It's important for Mary and me in the selection process.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of evaluators of musical talent also.
And it's not like Kimberly has an audition before.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. She was, at one point, she was involved in the Tall Tall music ensemble.
I think there is that.
It's Tell Tell.
Yes.
What was it?
Kimberly's probably on hold now going, what
is going on?
Kimberly's
what were the composers? Remember the composers that were appearing in a summer concert series last year? And I don't remember what the commercial copy was, but every single one of them we got wrong.
Yeah, you guys did get those wrong.
Yeah, we did. We had textures, just texting any kind. What kind of fools are you people?
It's Vivaldi, not Vivaldi.
You know, Bob Vivaldi's son. 6:47. If Kimberly is nice enough not to hang up on us, she will play the piano in a moment. She is Kid of the Week. Kid of the Week, Kimberly Hahn. She is a 15-year-old sophomore at Lake Forest High School, and she's on the phone with us. Kimberly, what do you want to do after college? Are you going to teach music? Are you going to be a performer? Any idea?
The performer, but I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, well, you don't have to decide yet, right? I mean, it's a little early.
Yeah.
And of all the great music conservatories at this young age, any idea where you'd like to go to school down the road?
I would love to go somewhere on the East Coast, New England, Curtis, Juilliard. Those are all great schools.
Dave, Juilliard.
Yeah.
Juilliard, Dave. Didn't you graduate from Juilliard?
Juilliard, no.
You dated a girl named Juilliard.
Julie, was that it?
That was it.
I knew I'd heard of it.
Different. Yes. When did you realize you had musical talent, Kimberly?
When I was five, I just kept on banging on the piano, so my parents decided to give me lessons to stop the noise, but I guess after that, I started just playing more and realizing how much I actually love it.
What a great title for your first album, Stop the Noise. I want you to remember that, and remember your friend Steve gave it to you. All right, you set the phone down, play something for us. What will you play?
I'll play Chopin Etude, Opus 10, number 5.
Yeah, that's my favorite. All right, whenever you're ready.
What's your favorite opus?
Kimberly Hunt. Getting a standing ovation, Kimberly. We're standing up in the studio on Michigan Avenue and applauding you. That was beautiful.
Ooh.
Really, really beautiful. Really beautiful. Incredible. Thanks. It sounded like there were 14 or 15 other people playing with you.
That would make my life easier, yeah.
It was really, really great. So thanks for letting me put you on the spot. And you're a fabulous young lady. And I salute you. I wish you nothing but success. And thank you for being our Kid of the Week. We'll tell you about prizes off the air here in just a second, okay?
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, thank you. Nice kid.
Wow.
Can I apologize to my mom right now for the years of piano lessons that she paid for, and I never sounded anything like that. Not even close.
Let's be honest. I mean, she didn't do chopsticks.
I could maybe play that.
Or
you
was
know
it
how
Chopin?
Hard those opuses sure. are?
Or Vivaldi.
Wow.
Yeah, that's your favorite.
Is that an opus? That was my favorite
yeah.
opus.
That's your favorite opus.
Yeah, yeah.
She's phenomenal.
Remember when Opus had a talk show in town? Isn't that what you Greek people say?
We
Opus.
Say, no, we say oppa.
Oh, that's different, isn't it?
A little bit.
All right, we're going to break Kimberly away from the piano and the violin, and we have tickets for the Volo Auto Museum, amongst other things here. Let's see. You can get more information at volocars.com, Lou Malnati's Pizza, because every kid loves pizza. Find one of the 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Give her an app gift card. So she can actually, you know, get some new earbuds or something so she can, when she's recording herself and then playing it back, then she can hear this segment as well and she can laugh at how ridiculous the show is and then hear how beautifully she played.
Make fun of us.
And that's at app.com, abt.com. Don't forget Kid of the Year upcoming where Dave and Mary will be tasked with trying to pick between all these great kids. 6:55, we're back after this. Thanks to Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. Steve Cochran Show continues next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And our message is clear. If you target America and our allies, you will not be safe. You will never be safe.
Obviously, we've got to make anyone who participates in or supports terrorism pay a price. And we also have to be aware of any consequences that might affect Americans, either military or civilian or our nation.
We are going to defeat the barbarians of ISIS, and we're going to defeat them fast.
When you face terrorists, everybody has to be on the American team.
The last person they want to see become president of the United States, believe me, is Donald Trump. I can tell you that.
Yeah, you can say that again. behind the bluster, behind the campaign, behind the president, behind all of those who talk about war are real people involved in war. And one of those people is known as late 60s. The reason I mentioned Terrence Patrick McGowan's age is he's standing by on the phone to talk about his book, The Silence of War, and his life, because he reenlisted in the Marines, or attempted to, at 52 years old after 9/11. I mean, this guy's the real deal. Dave, he could kill you and I with his bare hands, and I'm hoping he won't. Sure. Welcome to the program, Terrence Patrick McGowan. Hello, old Marine. How are you, sir?
Fine, Steve, and call me Terry.
I will. Semper Fi to you.
Semper Fi.
The Silence of War is the book. It's more than the story of your life. It's a story of the people you served with, and it paints the real pictures of what it's like to be out there beyond the campaign speeches.
Yeah, it's not a story of my life. You know, I preface a little bit about my life just to set up credibility, because one of the things I do in the book is I take to task certain people who I don't name, who I thought were not quite up to snuff.
Chicken ass.
Captain, I was, well, I won't go that far. I like to use the term empty uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But, I took somebody to task, and I had to set up my credibility because I was trained as a Marine officer first. So I did that. But it's not a story of my life. It's a story of what went on over there. And I was in Iraq briefly as well, and that kind of, I kind of muffed that one, but it set me up for success in Afghanistan. So there's a chapter on Iraq, and the rest of it is Afghanistan.
What I saw.
Go ahead.
But I do want people to understand what you did. I know you don't want this to be about patting you on the back, but it's important for people to know who I'm talking to and who you are. Beat cop, a Marine captain, and a special agent for the FBI. You retire at the age of 50. 9/11 hits. I think you were 52 then. And you tried to read.
Actually, I think it was about 50, but okay. Yeah, it's good enough. Close enough.
Yeah, well, neither one of us are math majors. And you tried right. to reenlist, and what happened?
Well, it's kind of funny. I call the recruiter, and I tell him, I'm a former Marine, and yada, yada, blah, blah. And he was interested until he heard my age. Then he almost choked on his coffee. I quipped in the book that. He said, "Don't call us, we'll call you, but only if aliens invade Los Angeles." That was the movie that was big at the time.
Right.
And I went to one of my professors who was a nationally known, internationally known jurist, and I knew he was a former Marine, and I said, "Hey, do you have any hooks? Can you get me back in?" And he kind of was in his 70s. He was an old M1 Marine.
Sure.
And he goes, "You know, when I called them, they told me the same thing, and I just couldn't get over it."
Well, I always maintain that there should be, because nobody's more patriotic than middle-aged guys. Because middle-aged guys get to a point where they realize the true value of this country and their lives, if they haven't realized it before, and the people they love, most importantly. And the problem, of course, with a platoon of middle-aged guys is your knees would be creaking so loud the enemy could hear you when you stood up.
Yeah, I was lucky in that regard. But, yeah, you're right. There was another guy. He was an Army National Guard fella. He's a cop in real life, so he was over there with the MPs. And he had been in Vietnam, and he'd been a helicopter gunner in Vietnam. Now, the guy was as brave as anybody else. When we were attacked, he manned the walls just like everybody else, but the guy was... He was in his 50s, and he was just too old to go anywhere, especially carrying all that armor. So finally they shipped him to the rear, thank God. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. But most guys can't do it. My brother called me a mutant. You know, he says, "You're a mutant. That's the only reason you're over there."
Well, and, I think of General David Grange, who ran the Big Red One, who, is about the same age as you are, Terry, and served with his distinction in Vietnam. And served in a leadership role in Gulf One, and is probably about an ounce and a half heavier than he was when he left NAM, and has stayed in incredible shape, and runs an advisory capacity now. Because the one thing that would be a huge mistake to do, especially in an all volunteer service, is to take the great brains who have served us before in the capacity that you and others have, and tell them we don't need you.
Well, I think that's true, and what I brought to the table was this synthesis of a street FBI agent, and I was a cop before that, and a trained Marine officer. I was trained to to fight the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. So I was expected to know all that stuff. One of the things you do, I've said all along, I think everybody agrees, that the terrain drives the tactics. You look at the terrain, I can tell you what has to happen. I've been to Civil War battlefields, and I just look at the terrain and I go, this is what had to happen. This is what they did. And, you know, over there, I could look at the terrain and go, if they're going to be successful, they have to hit us here. This is what they have to do, and this is what I would do. And then, of course, what you do is you prepare to defeat them. But that, and as a street guy, any cop listening to you knows this, you read people. You know, you consciously or unconsciously, you develop what I call baseline behavior. You know what's normal. And when you see something that's not normal, it jumps out at you. And so the first thing I had to do in Afghanistan was discover what is baseline behavior for the typical Afghan. And then after that, I could see anything that was out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I mean, it's just absolutely, you know, it's one thing that goes, well, that's common sense. But it's common sense combined with brilliance and experience that could bring Terry to a point where he would provide that kind of value, regardless of what his age is.
Terry, I have to ask you, 9/11 and the threat of terror changed the world, obviously. So what's the biggest change in training now that you've seen for soldiers, for the beat cops, for the FBI?
I don't know about beat cops. I've been gone too long. I know there's been a lot of changes in beat cops, and I'll just touch on it briefly. Before I retired, I noticed that the trainers were scaring the recruits. They made a game out of practical exercises. The recruit couldn't win, you know. It'd be supposedly a typical traffic stop, and they'd have some guy jump out of the trunk with an M16 and hose him. I think that created a whole generation of police officers who are walking up to things and nervous to begin with and ready to go for the gun to begin with, because that's the way they've been trained. That was a mistake, in my opinion. I didn't train people that way, because that's not the way it usually is. And that might have led to some shootings that were bad shootings, that might have led to some questionable shootings, which in turn riled up the population, and the rest is history. That's just a little outside observation on that. As far as the Marine Corps is concerned, when I was in, we were training for World War III without the nukes. Because we didn't expect nukes to be used, except perhaps tactical nuclear weapons, which will take out 1 square kilometer with one quick burst of radiation that kills any living thing and then doesn't do any blast damage. So it was designed to stop a Russian tank regiment. It's probably the reason the Russians didn't attack, because we had that. So we were training for World War III. Now it's all small unit stuff. I was out with a platoon. A platoon is the, you know, 3 squads in a platoon, 3 platoons in a company, 3 companies in a battalion, 3 battalions in a regiment, and 3 infantry regiments in a division. It all goes on 3. So I was out with a platoon on the tip of the spear. That's not the way I trained when I was on active duty. We were never anything less than a company, and you know we could have been part of a battalion. But so the training now is small unit. There's a greater and greater emphasis on the squad leader. The squad leader has to be good, and they are good. The guys I met, they were good. Some writer, I forget, he's probably a general, wrote about the strategic corporal, and the corporal's in quotation marks, the strategic NCO. He said that these are the guys who are going to win or lose the war against insurgents. And from what I saw, that's true. But I'll add a good second lieutenant in there also, because I worked for one. But the training, small unit stuff, how are we going to win? Quite frankly, I'm not optimistic right now. I'm not optimistic about Afghanistan. I think we've lost that one already. I think the parallels between Afghanistan and Vietnam are just so obvious.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're still there.
Right. No, I completely agree. And the strategy we've employed there, and the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent, and the lives and limbs that have been lost, you know, I don't believe you can change a minute of the past, obviously, but what have we learned from it?
I don't think the generals will learn anything, and I'll give you a little anecdote. I was with a second lieutenant, like I said, a 23-year-old second lieutenant with his first command. He's the farthest guy out. Mm-hmm. The reason I went with him was because the battalion commander told me he was losing sleep over the place. He thought maybe he pushed one platoon out too far, and I volunteered to go out there and just take a look around and let him know what I thought. And the place was so vulnerable, I called it the Alamo. But that lieutenant was brilliant. He was terrific. And he had read an Australian lieutenant colonel's 23 articles on counterinsurgency, and he went down a checklist and he just checked them all off. He won the war against counterinsurgency in the Gulistan Valley. He did it. First of all, we drove the Taliban out. They didn't want to come near us because they got their heads kicked in.
Right.
But then the powers that be, the big bugs in Washington, said, oh, we have to have a surge in the South. So they pulled all the Marines out of there and sent them to the South, where they engaged in Vietnam-style fighting. And they replaced the Marines in the Gulistan Valley with the small nation, Georgia, the small nation, and their army. Well, they don't fight like Marines, and the Taliban came back and killed everybody who had anything to do with this, which means they'll never trust us for generations.
Right.
The second lieutenant won the war in the Gulistan Valley, and the big bugs tossed it away.
And those type of stories get repeated in different forms that just recreate, frankly, something that's not a lot different than it was when Russia was kicked out, when the USSR was kicked
exactly.
out. What's your level of confidence in regards to ISIS with either of the main candidates as commander in chief? Whether you want to be political or not, are either one of them equipped to do the job?
Well, that's a big question, Mark. I didn't want to be political, but since you put it on the table, I think Hillary's job as a Secretary of State is abominable. I think it's abysmal. I think the surest indicator of future behavior is past behavior. I would expect absolute chaos if she becomes president. With Trump, we don't know. But he's a guy who doesn't like to lose. He has made some statements which some people thought were barbaric, but if you think about it, how did we win World War II? We didn't go around kissing babies. We carpet bombed cities, both German and Japanese. So we bombed blonde-haired, blue-eyed people in Germany, as well as little slanty-eyed people in Japan. We didn't care. We just wanted to win the war. And that's what you do when you fight a war. You fight a war to win, and when the war is over, you stop killing people. And Trump has said he's going to go in there and wipe them out. If you turned loose a Marine, let's call it a MEF, it's a Marine Expeditionary Force. It's a full division with reinforcements and attached air elements. You put one MEF in the Middle East, they'll have ISIS will be on the run. They'll be dead probably within, I don't know, give us time to get there. Set up stockpiles and then, bury all the dead. It'll take about a month and ISIS will cease to exist, but only if you take the handcuffs off the Marines.
Yeah, and the handcuffs are on now, and it's American-trained Iraqi soldiers who are on the verge of taking back Mosul, but look how long that has taken. And
right.
The longer the process goes on, the more places ISIS can run and expand and hide some more, and then you got to go find them there. It's an amazing book, Terrence Patrick McGowan. Terry, The Silence of War, An Old Marine and a Young Marine's War. Get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose one. And share it with your friends. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Steve.
/7:27. Again, whether you like Terry McGowan or not, he wasn't making racist statements about Japanese people. He was referring in context to Germans and Japanese and how they were characterized in the context of World War II. Blonde-haired, blue-eyed Germans and little slanty-eyed Asian people. That was the statement. So for the three or four of you who texted, I also am wearing headphones. I heard the interview, but I also heard what the context was and how he said it. Now, I don't agree with everything he said. You know how I feel about Trump. And I certainly don't know that Hillary is the answer in any way, shape, or form. And think about this. Think about the fact that if the worst case scenario is you got to pick one of them, well, one of them is going to be commander in chief, and one of them is going to be able to put your sons and daughters into war and in harm's way. So that's the scariest part of all of this, because that's in the job description, commander in chief. You know, I remember when Hillary made that thing up about being shot at in a combat zone. You know, talking about some experience she had as first lady. It was completely fraudulent, completely made up. I said I would never, ever, 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 ever vote for this woman. And then Donald Trump came along. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, who, you know, could create a crisis amongst people, so deep in the chain of command that they may not even follow his orders. That's a concern. That's talked about regularly at the Pentagon if you were to become president. Those are your two choices.
Did you see the new commercials with Mikhail, or rather, the dancer? I can't think of his name. The Russian dancer who was in White Nights.
Nureyev?
No, Baryshnikov.
Mikhail
Baryshnikov.
Is Nureyev dead? Rudolf Nureyev?
Oh, I don't know.
That wasn't really the question. Just
we'll check Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Baryshnikov made the, of course, in its political season, of, you know, and every candidate's going to have people in their ads that say what they want them to say. But Baryshnikov, boy, it was pretty chilling. He said that Trump has made statements that reminded him of when he was in communist Russia as a boy, as a young child. And he defected, remember?
Absolutely. And, you know, the great thing about America is free speech is protected, and we all have a right to our opinions, mm-hmm. educated or not. I tend to defer to those who have walked the walk. Mm-hmm. I remember having conversations with General Grange about stuff like this. And Terry McGowan, who, you know, at the age of 52, tried to re-enlist and eventually found a way to get back into the Marines and was getting shot at in Afghanistan when he was my age.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to listen to those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I may not agree with everything they say, but I'm going to listen to them. And I'm certainly not going to say I know better than they do. But I may not agree with the approach that they've chosen because in context and in time, it may not be the right approach.
Right. And it shows you the intel he has, too, because as we found out, you can't be an FBI agent past the you can't apply or enter the FBI past the age of 35. And there's a retirement age, too.
Yeah, is it 58? I think it's 58.
Yeah, 58 or 59, I think.
Yeah. So we're taking
or after a certain amount of service.
And that's the point, too, with him becoming a law enforcement professional, an LEP, as they're called. He was able to get back to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he wasn't lying. Afghanistan's lost. You know, and it's an absolute repeat of Russia in the, or the USSR as it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
So the minute we leave, they start shooting at each other again, and they you know, revitalize old tribal warfare that's gone on for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't give up Pakistan and the mess there, and you know, Pakistan's next door to India, and with the rest of the world nuked up, you can't start talking about maybe we'll use nukes. Again, this is the most frightening part of this, and I never thought it was even in play. The brilliance of the nuclear triad post-Harry Truman is understanding that you can never use it. Because when you use it, we're done.
Right.
It's over. What he was referring about with tactical nuclear weapons are these very precise nuclear strikes that take out, and the word nuclear shouldn't even be in the sentence, because they take out such a small area, devastatingly, but they take out a small area without the residual damage to, you know, an entire city.
Right.
It's just a mess. Complete mess. And Canada's not taking us.
No.
You know?
No.
And I may have passed the British citizenship test. Doesn't mean I can get back there.
I don't know if they're going to let you in. Did you pass that?
Yes. I was the only one on the show that passed it. You all failed miserably.
Yeah, but you got like a 70%.
Doesn't matter. I passed.
Still.
I don't remember failing miserably.
I think miserably was the word. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We were too far behind.
No. Fail is fail. I'll write you. 7:31. Let's come back to the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Spending the majority of the hour talking about terrorism here. Yeah, in regards to campaign 2016, but in general. And one of America's greatest writers, Lawrence Wright, standing by. A lot of you may have read the Pulitzer Prize winning Looming Tower. Also author of 13 Days in September and many, many others. The new book is The Terror Years from Al-Qaeda to the Islamic State. And good morning to you, Mr. Wright. Mr. Wright, are you with me? Do not have him. Not there? Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, we've got a technical setup which isn't working for one reason or another. We're looking into it, but the new book, as I said, The Terriers, it deals with the writing he's done on the Middle East and the writing he'll continue to do on it. He is certainly one of the experts.
And it's good to have a discussion about this. I'm glad we're doing this for the hour because, obviously, it's probably if one of the biggest, if not the biggest, campaign issues right now.
Yeah, Mr. Wright, are you with me?
Can you hear me?
I can. Thank
you,
sir.
All right, that's great.
Yeah,
I don't know where that. It must have been a terrorist.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Doing everything you can to stop you promoting the book. Hey, nothing to do with this conversation, but I want to congratulate you, too, on going clear Scientology in Hollywood. An amazing book. An amazing book. And very disturbing, but an amazing look at the wacky world of Scientology.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the new work here, because you lay out some important facts about the really the history of the Middle East. And let me start with one that I think some people think about pretty much every day. With all the focus on ISIS, are we paying enough attention, and do we have enough resources to pay attention to Al-Qaeda?
Well, Al-Qaeda is not dead. You know, certainly the core organization of Al-Qaeda has been reduced and has diminished its capacity to operate, but its children are out there. And, you know, there are these affiliates all over the world, but especially in Yemen and North Africa. These are very active organizations and still pose a tremendous threat to that region and to our allies and to ourselves.
Al-Qaeda predated ISIS by how long?
Actually, you know, when I was working on the Looming Tower, I was interested that there were so few people from Jordan or Lebanon or Syria that were in Al-Qaeda. It was mainly an Egyptian organization with a Saudi head on it. And I found out that there was another camp in Afghanistan where Al-Qaeda was born, and it was run by this guy, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi.
Mm-hmm.
And bin Laden was wary of him. But he gave him money just to kind of keep him on the leash. That's where ISIS was born. And, you know, they were concentrated on a different part of, you know, when we talk about ISIS, this S stands for Sham or ISIL, Levant. That's the region, Jordan, Israel, Palestine, Syria. Those guys all followed Zarqawi. And he had there was a different culture. Bin Laden was a businessman. Zawahiri, his number two, was a surgeon. Zarqawi was a criminal. He was a street thug. And, you know, he had totally different ideas about how to operate. And also, Al-Qaeda had this goal, eventually one day we will start a caliphate. And Zarqawi's feeling was, no, let's do it now. And he also had this goal of eliminating all the Shiites and creating a civil war inside Islam. So those were the goals that he had, and the child of his organization became ISIS.
But the two belief systems, if they are that, share one central business model, right? A perversion of what Islam is. And the question, again, it comes up here all the time, is there enough outspoken people in that part of the world, in the Middle East, speaking out against this perversion of Islam, or are they afraid to speak up?
Well, both things are true. There are people that are speaking out, and even a lot of imams and so on. And you know, the main victims of Al-Qaeda and ISIS are Muslims. You know, just look at what's happening in Syria. You know, they're killing Muslims. But, you know, the voices of those who speak out against it are drowned out by this savagery. And that's what captures our attention and also captures the attention of young people in the Middle East and South Asia whose lives are so blighted and have so little opportunity. And they want to ally themselves with something that would, you know, help them change history. And there is ISIS beckoning to those people.
You know, Lawrence Wright's a guest, and you understand better than most the lack of resources in media today at a time where we need better reporting and more reporting of the same. Are we reporting on the wrong thing here? Are we talking about terrorism the wrong way?
Well, there are different ways of speaking about terror, and I think that one thing, we concentrate so much on Islam as being, you know, the truth is terrorism arises. You just look at, for instance, Aum Shinrikyo, which was a Japanese cult headed by a blind yoga instructor. And it was, in my guessing, is that it was going to be a far more dangerous organization than Al-Qaeda, because the people that were attracted to it were engineers and scientists. They were trying to build a nuclear bomb.
Right.
They could have become far more dangerous. Now, you can't tell where, what organization or what kind of cult might erupt suddenly and where and how. And the causes will be all different. These people in Japan weren't impoverished, or they didn't lack for educational opportunities and so on. Those are all the things that we talk about when we talk about Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And yet I think that there is a lot more going on, and we should be talking about influence and how people are persuaded that that this organization can give meaning and structure to their lives.
Last question, Andre.
Yeah, Mr. Wright, ISIS seems to have really gained more steam because of the internet, which you were just referring to.
Yeah.
My question, is there a way to stop the radicalization of ISIS followers and these ISIS-inspired attacks?
Well, if I could answer that, everybody would be very happy.
There's your next book.
My feeling is ISIS created a problem for itself when it defined itself as a caliphate, and it required territory in order to justify that claim. And territory is something you can actually attack and contain. The internet is a completely different thing. It's very difficult to control the spread of the virtual caliphate that has now spread all over the internet and captured so many young minds.
I know you've got to run. I appreciate your time, and I'm a big fan of your work. And again, the new book is called The Terror Years, From Al-Qaeda to the Islamic State. Let's do it again.
Thank you, Scott. I look forward to it.
Thank you. And I don't often go by Scott. I usually go by Steve. But in the case of Lawrence Wright, he can call me Beth.
You'll make an exception. He knows people.
Yeah, that's fine. Just a word on Lawrence Wright, or as I like to call him, Leroy. Lawrence Wright, the author of The Terror Years, From Al-Qaeda to Islamic State, it really is a history book of the Middle East and terrorism. And it reads like an exciting novel. I mean, I highly recommend it. I'll recommend it even higher if I can find my copy of it. But I would suggest that you get it and read it and consume it. And when you hear discussions that ISIS started, in 2009 or 2010, no, it's completely factually incorrect. The lunatic that started ISIS was in prison in 2004 and was allowed to preach to other prisoners in prison. Was it Abu Ghraib? I think it was Abu Ghraib.
Yeah.
But in an Iraqi prison, and that's where the radicalization of those people, those bad guys, really was fired up.
Right, and Abu Ghraib was the prison for the worst of the worst. It was like the TAMS Supermax prison.
Yeah, awful. It was awful.
By the way, 15 years this year.
Yeah, 9/11. 15-year anniversary. That's exactly right. Wow. So The Terror Years is a history book, and earlier on talked to Terry McGowan on The Silence of War. So basically you get perspective from a soldier who's been there and done that and a reporter who's been there and done that. So who you got, Steve? Who you got? I am in the exact same position I was in before, but I will tell you again what I told you at the top of the hour. I never imagined a world where I could vote for Hillary Clinton, and I'm not sure I could still vote for her. But I did say I'm not sure. I'm positive I can't vote for Trump because I can't. In my opinion, and this is an educated perspective because we swim in this pool every day, I can't put him in charge of the military of this country. I can't. That's my choice. That doesn't mean it's yours. And I'm not sure I could in any way, shape, or form vote for Hillary Clinton either, because there's things she has done, the dishonesty, the lack of trust. That's why this is such a repulsive election, because it's such a bad choice between these two.
But you still have to vote.
You have to vote, and I may be one of those people that doesn't vote for the president and votes for everything else on the ballot. But I've never done that in my life, and I would hate to do that now. That's why I had such hope for the libertarians to actually pop and to come forward, and yet we can't find them.
Well, they had a great every opportunity to do so, and they just didn't really do any press.
Yeah. And they're still not the Commission on Debate still isn't fully eliminated. Look, Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, 3%, 2%, it's not going to happen. And, you know, me touting the libertarians is actually something that could help Donald Trump. But to have a third choice would be very important for people. And to see two sitting governors come out with the opinions that they had, it was an interesting idea. But unless they suddenly find a way to catch fire and actually, you know, show up for interviews and things like that, it's not going to happen. I mean, have you seen William Weld anywhere lately?
No.
No.
Have you?
No.
I mean, not even
Gary
on the
Johnson, you know, just here and there. So that's disappointing. So really, I mean, honestly, it comes down to what we already knew. It's Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And good luck.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should.
The Wintrust Community Banks Hour, and Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9. It is Dean Richards, isn't it?
Same one who's going to be filling in for you all morning long tomorrow.
Appreciate that. I'll be out tomorrow and Thursday.
But listen anyway.
And the reason I ask if it really was you is because famed author Lawrence Wright finished a very serious interview with me about 20 minutes ago and said, thanks, Scott. I've never been called Scott. Maybe I'll go with that.
Did you tell Dean that the guest hosts always bring breakfast?
I did not. Okay. No. And money? Money for the other people?
Yeah, money, a little Greek food, whatever he wants.
Yeah, yeah. This is show number 719.
So tomorrow would be the big 720.
Yeah, if you want to. We're not going to call it that.
Except there should be 720 when you're there.
Well, yes, we'll do that Friday. But here's the thing. The 719 shows we've done so far, just in coffee and buying coffee for the staff, have cost me over $1 million.
No.
So I'm just warning you, Dean. That's all.
Would have been considerably cheaper if you not gone to the giant coffee store across the street.
Which giant coffee store? The one that rhymes with Starbucks?
I wouldn't say that.
All right, let's
adds up $17 a cup.
Yes, it does.
After a while,
but it's really a good call.
Who's filling in on Thursday?
Andre and Dave.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Who do you like better filling in for you?
Yes, Steve. Scott.
Yeah, I like this guy, Scott. This guy, Scott, who I know. He's really good. Nick Cannon news, Batman news, Britney Spears news, Shannon Doherty news, and then Dee Snider's on with us next hour. But did you talk to him this morning?
I did not talk with him, but I think it's pretty amazing what he's done.
It is a cool story, so we'll get to that coming up. Well, you know what? Let's do that first. Let's do that right here.
This is really nice. I mean, everybody knows the Twisted Sister song, We're Not Going to Take It Anymore, or, you know, big rock anthem. I can see you in your midriff T-shirt, jumping up and down, singing.
All us guys named Scott wear these.
Now Dee Snider has taken this song and he's turned it into a beautiful acoustic ballad for cancer research, for cancer awareness, for cancer research. And it's a remarkable video. We can play a little bit of it for you, but it's not going to do justice to how absolutely amazing this sounds right now. So give it just a little listen.
Here we go.
We're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna take it. We're not gonna take it anymore. We're not gonna take it.
Kind of get the idea.
It's a cool arrangement.
It's a beautiful arrangement. It's just an acoustic piano and Dee Snider. But the video, he's on a beach, big grand piano players behind him, and is singing this song. But interspersed in this video, clips of little kids who are getting chemo, little kids who are, clearly getting treatment for different forms of cancer. Women who are getting their heads shaved, interspersed in this. And it's about one of the most emotional videos. I mean, anybody who has known anybody that's gone through cancer, if you've gone through it, if you've been in any way involved with, this disease and, said to yourself, you came to that point of we're not going to take this anymore. This is about as powerful a video as there could possibly be. It's extremely moving. I put it up on my Facebook page. I'm sure we can put it up on the radio station page also. This is one you want to just share the heck out of because it is absolutely beautiful and it benefits. Magician Chris Angel has a cancer charity that's called Help. And Dee Snider did this for his pal Chris Angel. They've been friends for a long time. to bring awareness to raise money for his cancer charity.
Well, good for him. And as I said, Dee Snider will be on with us in about less than an hour now, about 9:10.
He's dressed a little bit like Fabio. That disturbs me.
The all white,
yeah,
with the long flowing hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's like 60, what's 65?
61,
oh,
I 61. Think, right?
Is he bringing the Christmas show back this year?
I hope so. Is he, Dean?
I have not heard that, no.
Because I thought I was going Chicago, Toronto, Chicago.
Yeah, that's what they had hoped to do, was to bring it back. That's what our friend John told us, but
we'll see. 8:17, back with more of Dean in a moment.
You'll be calling his name, oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972, oh, 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 oh.
All right, back to Dean. Let's run through the list here.
I'm going to play this song like every 20 minutes tomorrow, by the way.
That's a good idea. Yeah, it's a good idea for the show. Shannon Doherty, this is more cancer news.
It is more cancer news. She has come to a settlement with her former agents. She was suing them, claiming that the breast cancer that she's now dealing with got further along because the former managers failed to pay her medical insurance premiums, causing her to lose her coverage, not being able to get treatment quickly enough. So they've come to a settlement on all this with the former management. They didn't give any details about what that settlement was, but she's going through her treatment right now, which is all that matters. But, you know, who needs legal stuff like that when you're dealing with chemo and radiation and all
that?
Yeah,
and I don't know how it happens in the real world, but in show business, you will sometimes have an agent, and I've been offered this deal, and I've never taken it, but an agent or a manager who your paychecks go to them, and they pay your bills, and then they pay you in addition to that. Now, you can obviously request more of your own money, but the idea is they manage your money for you. And it sounds like that was the case.
Yeah,
she thought it was being taken care of.
Yeah, you don't even worry about, is my insurance being paid, or the things that all of us do, pay our own bills. It just doesn't happen on that level. So, but my offer to you, Steve, is still there.
You want me to send me my money?
If you send me your check,
yeah,
I'll take care of all your stuff.
Let me get back down that
for you.
Item number three, Britney Spears is taking off her clothes.
She's auctioning off her clothes.
Oh, I got that story wrong.
I guess she has to. I mean, if somebody successfully wins the auction, I she will eventually have to take them off. It's specifically the clothes that she's going to wear at the MTV Video Music Awards this Sunday.
Okay.
In order to qualify to win them, she's asking that you make a $10 donation to the Red Cross to help the flood victims in her home state of Louisiana. She's from Kentwood, Louisiana, still has a home there, and is trying to do her part to help the Red Cross to raise some money for relief in that area. So you could win her clothes or an opportunity to actually go to New York this weekend to meet her and attend the MTV Video Music Awards show. I think I'd rather have the clothes.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, and good for her for doing it. Purple Rain at the Pritzker Pavilion tonight. George Foreman standing by, and I don't want him to beat up either one of us.
6:30 at the Pavilion tonight. They're asking everyone to wear purple.
Makes sense. Nick Cannon's enrolling in college. Why?
We don't really know the answer to that question. We just know that he enrolled as a freshman at Howard University in Washington, and he was carrying a Louis Vuitton backpack.
Yeah, me too.
Guessing a lot of freshmen don't have that.
And there's going to be a new animated Batman movie with Adam West, Burt Ward, and Julie Newmar.
Doing the voices.
Yeah, very nice.
Look at you getting through this right away.
Well, listen, I love George Foreman.
Like 10 seconds.
I love George Foreman.
I do, too.
And he's standing by on the phone now. Good morning, George.
Good morning to you.
How have you been?
Things are going great. Good. Got a chance to even show the world tonight about how life has been going. Traveling to Asia for a whole month. Doing things I should have done when I was 25.
I understand, but don't pull any muscles plugging it, because we'll take care of it for you. It's called Better Late Than Never. Better Late Than Never.
I can't wait to use that one.
Yeah, on NBC. Now, listen, it's Shatner. It's Fonzie, it's Henry Winkler, and it's George, and who's the fourth? Who am I missing?
Terry Bradshaw, the
football player. That's right. So I'm guessing of the other three guys, the one you most wanted to punch in the head was William Shatner. Is that accurate?
Oh, no. He was the most gentle, the most wise of all of the guys. And we spent so many hours just talking because he had so many questions. Then he wanted to make certain he knew everything about wherever we were. He wanted to know something about it.
Really?
That wasn't on the tourist, you know, in the tourist center. You had to find out something. He would figure it out. That's a wise, smart man. I call him 85 going on 27 years old because he was the most youngest.
Yeah, how about
he was
that?
The youngest.
How about that? 85. Dean, say hi to George Foreman.
He was the most young of all the guys.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Did any of them have questions about grilling food on the George Foreman grill?
And we talked about that. Even a little piece of episode, we even brought a grill out. But the idea was to enjoy ourselves in Asia and all of the foods. So ordinarily, I travel as an athlete. I couldn't eat those things. I couldn't take a chance of going out to, you know, and eating those local foods. But this time I ate sushi. I ate locusts. You saw it. Show it to me, and I'd eat it.
I think that's part of the reason that George was so angry when he fought, because George was not, you know, George, everybody loves George. But when George is a fighter, I remember interviewing you back in the early days when I got in the business, and I thought you were going to kill me, and that was just when you walked in the room. Now you're...
Can you imagine? That's right. Can you imagine? I'm like, my first career, I had a waistline of like 32. And I fought all the time. That mean I didn't know what ice cream was.
Right.
I didn't have any idea what McDonald's... I didn't know they exist.
That's why he was so angry, Dean. That's why George was mad.
I was mad all the time. When you saw me, all I was thinking, how can I cook this guy?
So, Dean, have you seen clips of the show?
I have not. I'm looking forward to it because it's quite a cast of characters in this.
Yeah, and I think it's, George, isn't it like the Amazing Race for old guys? Isn't that what this is?
Yeah, it's better late than ever. And it's a message for all of us, too. Don't wait to live. Because you hustle
nice.
All your life from trying to make $1,000, from trying to make $100,000, trying to make $1,000,000. You're trying to feed your family, your children, your wives, friends, and business. You look up in your life, you haven't done anything but hustle. This time, I got a chance to live. Going down the rivers in Asia, playing with elephants, things that ordinarily we never do, we live this time. Better, and I'm glad I did it better late than never.
Look at you. How slick are you? It's the great George Foreman, and what a great message. Last question, Dean, for George.
My question is regarding Muhammad Ali. I mean, you know, he passed away recently. One of the most famous fights of all time was yours with him, the Rumble in the Jungle. And I wonder what are your most lasting memories of Muhammad Ali, either in the ring or personal one-on-one time that you've spent with him through the years?
Oh, I learned to love him. But probably the funniest moment, I think I was trying to stare him down in the middle of the ring in Africa. We hadn't even talked to each other, haven't met, hadn't argued, never had a press conference together. So he meets me in the middle of the ring, I guess they're trying to throw me off. He said, George, you were in high school when I was beating Sonny Liston. You don't belong in the ring with me. And I turned and almost burst out laughing as I walked to my corner thinking, man, I never spent one day in high school.
And by the way, George Foreman isn't kidding. For those of you who don't know your boxing history, you truly did grow to love the man, and he was a very good friend to you.
I loved him. Yeah, we were good friends. I loved him. And I still love him.
Yep.
From Ohio.
Amen. You're a good man, George Foreman. I appreciate you being on. Good luck with George. I forgot. You didn't get a chance to mention it. What's the name of the show again?
Better late than never.
It's tonight. And see it on NBC. That's George Foreman.
It's too bad he doesn't have more irons in the fire.
Guy's the best. Just the best. And he named all his kids George.
I love that.
Including the girls.
Aren't there like six Georges?
I think six is the number.
Six
George
Foremans.
George Juniors. Yeah, George, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, whatever the math turned out to be.
I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Cool guy.
All right, buddy. Thanks for covering tomorrow. I'll talk to you later.
Have fun.
See you. And by the way, as you would expect, you guys will call me at 8:20, and I'll do the entertainment report.
Yeah, that'd be great. By the way, George's daughters are Georgetta and Georgine.
I knew it was something close. Yeah.
And Frida.
And six boys?
Yeah. George Foreman Jr., George Foreman the third, the yeah. fourth, yeah. the fifth.
Oh, there's only three?
Four boys, I think.
Fifth
two,
and sixth?
Three, four. Yeah.
Yeah, four boys.
So is he the second, and then his dad's the first?
But they all have nicknames. They have, like, George the third
well,
goes
they'd
by...
Well, they have to.
George the third goes by Monk. George the fourth goes by Big Wheel. George the fifth goes by Red. And you're right, there is a George sixth. He goes by Little Joey.
Yeah, you... Little Joey. we'll take a break. We'll take a break. Come in and get your big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hello, Peter. What's happening? We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I have the memo right here. I just,
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to play a game I haven't played on the radio in a long time, but we have prizes to give away. It's time for Shop Talk. Here's how you play Shop Talk at 312-981-7200. You call me up and you say, Steve, and then you whip into some jargon, some lingo that only you would know. Now, I will say this. You can only use one form. So if you have a TPS report, you can only use that once because it's hard for me to guess what you do for a living, the object of the game, based on form numbers. There's got to be something else in there. For instance, if I said to Jake, hey, Jake, isn't it great we don't use carts anymore? Mm. Okay, mm-hmm. Carts. What are carts?
Yeah, those 8-track carts that we use.
Cartridges. Oh, see, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cartridges.
Yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. But that would be a form of shop talk right. In this business.
Or if I said to you, Steve, pot that up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, the pot is hot.
Right.
Watch it. That pot's a little hot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Jake, you got one? Give me a little shop talk.
Your mic is hot.
Am I a talk show host?
Yes.
All right. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks. If we can guess what you do for a living, you lose. If we can't guess what you do for a living, you win. But as you know on this show, it's a pretty good chance you're going to win. So the question is, will you give us some shop talk, 312-981-7200, and we will guess what you do for a living. Okay, is Denny first? Yeah, let me go to Denny. Denny. All right, Denny, remember, you can only use one form. Shop talk. Go ahead.
Got to calibrate this thing.
No, you can't. Hold on a second. No, a lot of people calibrate. It's a million people that calibrate.
But he's got to stump us. And,
well, we need more than that. We need more than calibrate.
Yeah.
Calibrate is just balance, right? Calibrate is...
Or so we think.
Is sync.
Or so we think. Maybe he's already stumped us.
Let's go back to Denny and ask Denny for more. All right, Denny, give me more than calibrate.
Now I have to think of something. Hold on.
All right, hold on. I've got to calibrate this thing. All right, any guesses?
It's a surveyor.
Surveyor?
Mechanic.
Contractor.
I think he's an expert in calibration. That's my guess. Let's go to Denny and see if any of these are right. Denny, what do you do for a living?
I sell commercial restaurant equipment.
Yeah, of course. Of course you do.
He stomped on us.
Yeah, of course you do.
So what's he calibrating?
He's calibrating his paycheck.
Nice job.
No, he's calibrating some piece of the equipment. We're going to need a little more than that. But Denny's a winner. That was just a sample
that
question.
That was good. That was good.
Well,
he did
great.
It really quickly.
Yeah.
It was good.
Here's Mary game. Now with nothing but shop talk because she makes most of this up. It's time for your traffic trouble spots update as the Wintrust Community Banks Hour continues. And we'll come back with Rich and Catherine and you too at 312-981-7200. Shop Talk got some callers standing by. Texter's doing a good job of throwing out some examples here. It's work talk. Talk you have at work that people at work understand, but the rest of us wouldn't, and we have to guess what you do. 815, specifically and laterality are key. Can't call. Working. Unfortunately, I don't know what they do.
Yeah, I don't know.
How about this? Let's go, guys. We need to take the material up to 2,050 degrees and drive back down to about 1,700 degrees after we do an immediate evacuation of the atmosphere. And once it's there, it needs to be tempered back to 700 degrees to get that Rockwell hardness. What do?
Make wood-burning pizzas.
No, but I like that guess. Dave, your thoughts?
Astronaut.
A metallurgist.
Mm.
And I like this one, too, from the 312. My wife had a form that had to be filled out. Wasn't great. The acronym was IPMS.
Oh, hate those forms.
Let's go to the phone now where Catherine is standing by. Catherine, give me a little shop talk.
I sit down.
You work in a chair.
I work in a chair, and it rocks.
You work in a rocking chair store. Oh, wait, yes. There's more. Go ahead.
I sometimes figure problems out.
Gonna need more.
With people in the room.
How about specific jargon for your work? Something, some the language of your office.
I never use it because I hate it.
Okay. All right.
I speak in metaphors. I don't speak in, I'm not going to tell you what kind of it is because then I would, I'd give it away.
You're a problem employee. That's my guess.
Well, that is true. That's why I am so good at what I do, though. Because
right,
I have
so
been a
successful
problem person.
You're a successful yes, Dave.
Teacher.
A kindergarten teacher.
Used to be.
All right, I got it. Okay. I got it.
I think you're a grandma.
I think she's a poet.
A poet? Why is she a poet?
She doesn't even know it.
She's a grandma who rocks her.
Look at my grandma's feet. They don't show it. They're Longfellows.
All right, so give it to me. What is it?
I am a therapist.
Oh, a therapist. You listen to people bitch. God bless you. God bless you.
Maybe no, she could come in for...
You know what I do? Sure. I specialize in people who have been traumatized.
Oh, well, so definitely. Well, God bless you double then. Because very important work, and I talk about it all the time. I think it ought to be mandatory. Everybody ought to go into therapy. It's a health club for your head.
Oh, and all therapists should be in therapy, too. Hello.
Yeah, well, that's true. I've met a few. All right, Catherine's a winner. Let me go one more here. This is Rich. I'm looking for shop talk, Rich. The language of your work. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I want to say enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I think we're having some problem with the G-code.
I think we're having some problem with the G-code. You're a gynecologist? Oh, no, that's not the G-code.
Although it could be.
That's definitely that's something else.
All right, I'm going to say...
He's got problems with the G-code.
An IT guy.
That's possible.
Computer guy. Yeah,
close.
I was going to say computer programmer.
Very close. You want me to tell you?
Yeah, go ahead.
I program robots.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a cool job.
What's
cool.
The G stand for?
Well, I don't know.
that's good. some of the
code might be G90, GOG54, X0, Y0.
All right, now you're just making stuff up.
Now he's tapping into all of our identities.
What kind of robots do you program?
These are... computer numeric controlled mills and lathes.
Wow.
And
cool.
Things like that. So our machines can build anything. Aerospace, DOD projects, automotive, medical, dental.
Eliminating humans left and right. That's what our pal Rich is doing.
Creating higher paying jobs for those willing to do the training.
There you go, Rich. Good answer. Right. Good answer. Hold up. All right. So Rich wins as well. I think the next time we do this, though, we're going to need to go a little deeper in the shop talk.
Yeah.
A little deeper. We need a couple of sentences. A little deeper in the shop talk.
Are we going to do more? This is fun.
Oh, no. We're out of time. Winners include, prizes include for the winner, certificate for foursome, including green and cart fees at Billy Casper Golf. Enjoy some of the best golf in the Midwest at 23 Chicagoland Billy Casper Golf courses that fit every age, skill, and level. Find a course at bcgchicago.com, Lou Malnati's Pizza, loumalnati's.com, Apt Electronics, abt.com, and at chevydrivechicago.com, WGN Radio, Stainless Steel, Travel Mug, and a Bag of Papa Nicholas Coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Okay. We We had an option on what game we were going to play today. I wanted to play. I'm thinking of a number between one and a million. But you guys were.
It's a good game.
It's kind of boring, though.
Anna.
701.
It's 701. How does he do it? It's unbelievable. 8:57. Back with your news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dean Snyder in just a second. We'll play Shop Talk again sometime soon. People are texting in their Shop Talk now. I got four left, locked and engaged. I have no idea. DPDs are typically paid out of the statutory mechanical rate. See, that's good Shop Talk. DPDs. You need a bobtail to Detroit truck driver, tractor to tractor.
What?
Shop Talk. I'm not sure if I could use the... Listen to this one. I'm not sure if I should use the fingering or the worsted for my next project.
Okay, that's going to be a doctor.
No.
The fingering of the what?
I ground the OD to 234,000ths and put a 300,000th radius on the corner and made it center cutting. This is Shop Talk. That's what I'm talking about.
Glass cutter.
I tell lot lizards no a lot. What? And then a couple more G code. And then this might be my favorite one from the 619. OMG, I'm so boring. 9/11, it's our friend D. Snyder standing by on the phone. Let's go there now. Good morning, D.
Good morning, guys and girls. How are you?
Hi, D.
Hi, D.
It's a little early for Sleepy D. Sleepy
D. I'm on the West Coast, and I got up just for you and, you know, and for the cause, and for the cause.
This is a really cool thing. We played the clip last hour of the new arrangement of We're Not Going to Take It. You got to see the video. You got to take time to see the video. Chris Angel has a foundation. He's been a friend of yours forever. Has a foundation that fights pediatric cancer specifically, but cancer in general. And how did this all come together? Chris calls you, or you suggested it, or what happened?
You know, I'm releasing in October a new album. Just finishing up with Twisted Sister, farewell shows in Europe, and I've been working on a record with Chicago's own writing hero, Damon Ranger, who's won an Oscar, Emmys, Grammys. I mean, this guy's a powerhouse, and he and I put together a whole new contemporary, not heavy metal record, okay? And we were talking about, he wanted to feature my voice. He said, man, your voice is still powerful, but it also has these years on it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And, he said, I wanted to get something that's just raw and basic. And we were going around, and I started talking about We're Not Going to Take It, and the idea that the message has gotten lost over the years. It's become more of a bar song or a karaoke song than anything else. And I said, you know, the message is needed now more than ever. Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to turn that off. And so we recorded the song, just piano and vocal, really stripped down for the new album. And Chris contacted me a couple months ago and said, hey, I'm doing this charity thing. My son has, Chris's son has leukemia, 2 years old. He's in the video, very sad. And he says, you know, would you attend to maybe donate something? I said, you know, I just did this new song I think might really be apropos. And I sent it to him, and 3 minutes later he calls me back. He said, please let me use this song as the battle cry for fighting children's cancer. So I worked it out that there was no royalties and no charge for it or anything. And he said, I want to shoot a video with you doing this song. And so we shot this video, and I woke up this morning. It is approaching 2 million hits on Facebook. It's just gone viral, and people are just so moved by the song, the way we've done it, and the video, too. The video is very powerful as well.
D, it's incredible. I literally can't get through about the first 20 seconds without starting to cry. It's so moving. It's so powerful. And people are, like you said, sharing it like crazy. Got 101,000 shares in the first couple minutes that it was up. So hopefully people can go to Chris's site, to chrisangelhelp.com, and make a donation, because people are already asking how they can help, what they can do.
It's, well, yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, everybody's been touched by cancer in one way or another, if not personally or with family members, friends, somebody. It's just, there's no degree of separation between the world and cancer. But I didn't even know how underfunded children's cancer is. Only 4% of the money for research goes to like 12 different children's cancers. And so Criss Angel's, you know, a thing is to raise money specifically to help children. But the statement, you know, and when you say, well, I may turn, when I could take it into a power ballad, people kind of laugh. But when you hear it, I think it really worked, and I think that's what Criss heard. He heard the power in the words, and it takes on the song with those visuals, takes on an entirely new meaning. So I'm really happy. I'm reading the things people are writing, Andrea.
It is Andrea.
You can call me anything you want.
The builder of my house is Andrea. Sorry, Andrea, and it's and I'm just blown away. I mean, just. I'm crying. That's all I'm reading. I'm crying. They're so moved by the video and the way we did the song. So it's incredible to touch people like this with a song that was so raucous and wild. The same song 30 years ago evoked an entire different emotion.
Well, yeah, you know? And there's things that happen for a reason, right? And there's a reason that you and Criss are pals, and there's a reason that you're in his life, and there's a reason this can be done and be successful on the level it is already, and it's just getting started. The people that we see in the video, including the adults, where are they from?
Well, in the video, you see, well, the little kid is Criss's son.
Okay.
Who's just two and thankfully is in remission right now.
God bless.
There is work being done that's, you know, helping these people and we are winning sometimes, you know. So he's in remission, but seeing the footage of what they went through with him is incredibly powerful. The woman in there was holding a photo of her daughter with a daughter's photo's head shaved. It is her daughter grown shaving her mom's head. It's a symbolic head shaving that she wanted to do. Her daughter survived childhood cancer.
Wow.
And is living to be the one performing this gesture. And it was very nice for her to come forward because Criss wanted a powerful statement in this video. And she volunteered to shave her head for the cause, you know, on the video. So it's one thing we couldn't communicate in there, but it's really, you know, there are happy endings, and nobody make a joke because it's too serious right now. There are happy endings in this in the world of cancer. Unfortunately, they're way too far and too between, you know.
Well, I love hearing that Criss Angel's little guy is doing better, and I love that you did this. Jake, when we go out, can we get the clip we had with Dean last hour to play that again? Do we have that? Yes. Tell me when that's ready. And we're going to play a clip of the song. You know, and honestly, there's nothing better than radio. But radio, frankly, doesn't do this complete justice. Because as good as the music is, you need to see it with the pictures to get the full power of the meeting. Meaning.
And credit you, Criss Angel. We're both from Long Island. And we've known each other a very long time. And he's an incredibly talented guy. And this, I'm going to be totally honest. When he said, I tried to bring in Marty Callner, a buddy of mine who directed the original When I Could Take It video. He's one of the great video directors of all time. And Criss said, I want to do this. And I couldn't say no. I mean, it's his son. It's his cause. And I know it meant a great deal. He said, I have a vision. I see how this thing should go. And he's living it, you know? And so I said, okay, man, you know, your call. And he did an incredible job. I mean, he really just, and no money. It was like just out of his own pocket, the little bit we spent. We spent a few hours literally out in a dry lake bed in Las Vegas. It was like 115. And we were out there filming. And, you know, and he just did an incredible job. So kudos to Criss.
Dee, I was going to ask you where you shot it. So you shot it in Vegas. It's beautifully shot, too. With the white piano, and
yeah,
you're all
even,
in white.
You can't even tell you're about to have heat stroke.
Yeah, the aerial shots.
My wife said you were barely, we were being watched over. You know, and Suzette, Criss said, so what are you going to wear for the video? And I said, you know, Rockstar Black. And Suzette, who is my stylist, and Suzette said, no. She said, this is for children's cancer. I want you wearing all white. I said, all white? I haven't worn all white. And she went and pulled together some outfit. And
yeah, it's been, yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen you in all white.
Nobody's seen me in all white. I mean, except in a hospital. I mean, you know, against my will. No, I mean, but at the same time, it was so just everything that happened. Just, you know, it's amazing. Like you just,
God
like
bless.
You said, Steve, it comes together. Things come together for a reason, and all the pieces fell together, and it's having an incredibly powerful effect. And I'm stunned and honored that people are reacting the way they are. You know, it's just amazing.
When are you coming back to Chicago?
Really soon. I'm coming back. My new album, We Are the Ones, I'm doing Riot Fest.
Oh, good.
September 18th. But this is not a Twisted Sister show. This is all new material. It's all contemporary. Think Foo Fighters. Think 30 Seconds to Mars.
Cool.
I got a whole new band. I'm using Pink's band. And I'm doing a matter of fact show. They go, oh, D-Side of Riot Fest. Yeah, like all the way down on the bill. I'm not playing Twisted Sister music. So I'm doing that. And then then my record comes out in October 28th, and I start. You know, I'm closing the door with Twisted in our farewell shows, and they've been tremendous. And I'm opening the door to taking a shot at doing it again. I don't know, man. I feel like Tony Bennett in some weird way, some old guy.
Listen, no. I love Tony Bennett, but I think you got a little bit of time before you get there. thanks for the work you're doing. And the website for Chris Angel, Andrea, as well?
It is Chris Angel. Chris spells his name C-R-I-S-S. ChrisAngelHelp.com. It's hashtag make a difference.
More coming up on 720 WGN. For those of you who have been nice enough through the years to follow me at all the various places I've been thrown out of, go back to the 90s at the Loop, where DeCastro and Larry were at different times were my boss. We had one of my, well, let's be honest, my favorite intern of all time.
Why? Because she's here?
And no, just in general.
No, in general.
Because here's the thing. She's a professional masseuse.
Oh.
Yes. She also has a great laugh.
Yeah.
And she actually went on to a pretty cool, you know, Hollywood-based business. She worked on The Tonight Show for a while. And when Leno was funny, which wasn't that often, she wrote those jokes. How are you?
I kind of laughed at his jokes.
Yeah, well, you had to. You work there. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you, too.
Yeah. And for those of you, again, that followed the show back in the day, there was another producer named Grunwald.
Mm-hmm. Who was legendary. I love Grunwald.
Yes, you were one of the few. And Renee's job was to tell me what Grunwald was up to when he was engaged in something, you know, that would cause problems for the show. Now, when were you at The Tonight Show?
I started in 99. I interned after interning for you.
And then 99 to like 2000 and,
that's
well,
what got
14.
Me the job.
Yeah, of course. You told Jay, I said, listen, I know Cochran. He said, okay, well, then you're in. Yeah. Was that a fun job?
Oh, my God, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Especially during the controversy. The controversies.
That was the fun part?
It was so much fun because we're kind of like, who's the mole? Because things would be on TMZ.
Because you knew somebody was talking.
Yeah, because I'm like, how's it? It's on the computer right now. It just happened.
Right. Literally just happened in here. Somebody called.
Yeah.
So at any point, did you think it was you?
No.
No, of course not.
No, they would ask me, Renee, who do you think it is? I'm like, I can tell you right now.
All right. So do you know who it was?
I think I have an idea. I can't say his name. It's a boy.
I think it was, I think it was feeding TMZ? I think it was Jay. I think Jay was calling those leads in.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Just to get some publicity.
Yeah, because he needed it. Yeah. If you stayed in touch, what's he doing? I mean, he does the car show.
I just saw him at his launch for the car show. They did a launch party for him.
Okay.
Really nice. They brought on all these cool cars, and they even had a Tesla, a police car.
Oh, that's cool.
And the
cool.
chief of police was there.
The Tesla
police with bodyguards,
car.
By the way.
Wow.
The chief of police has bodyguards.
Chief of police from L.A.?
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Well, you
but, if you're the chief of police, wouldn't the bodyguards be the cops that work for you? Right? I would think, anyway.
Anyways, Jay was like, Renee, how are you doing? I'm like, Jay, it's so nice. You know, hugging. Just
and also, it looks like he's not missing a meal now that he's off TV every night. He's eating good.
No, I think he looks thinner, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
I even said, wow, he looks thinner.
You would know.
Yeah.
Give me your favorite Tonight Show moment. The one you tell people when they find out you worked at The Tonight Show.
I think it's like behind the scenes kind of stuff.
Yeah, but what is it? It's got to be somebody we know, obviously.
Yeah, it's just kind of silly stuff. But like, I remember Simon Le Bon because my friend loved him. And and they asked me to go in and massage him. So this is great.
Really?
Oh my God, you love him? So,
I do. Lead singer,
oh my God,
Duran
I'm
going to
love the story. So,
yeah.
So wait. So they had me go in the room and I don't have my table. So I'm like, okay, I'll just go in the room. So I go in the room And he's naked. And I'm like, oh, there's Simon Le Bon naked. So then there he is on the floor.
Wait,
and
now, hold
like,
on a second.
Come in love. I'm like, okay.
For girl-
Don't interrupt
hold
her.
Hold on. For girls from the 80s, this is a big deal.
Well, I didn't like him. I thought John Taylor was cute.
But he was cute.
But you were a big Duran Duran fan.
I liked Duran Duran. I wasn't like, oh my God.
But Simon Le Bon was naked.
He was naked. So there he is.
Wasn't even laying on a towel? He's just laying on the floor?
No, just laying there. Well, maybe he had a towel. I don't remember.
She wasn't looking at the towel.
Tonight Show green dressing room. You know what's going on in there.
So then we're massaging, and he's like, oh, love, this feels so good. I'm like, oh, good. I'm so glad. And so then he flips over. I'm like, there's Simon Le Bon. Simon. And I'm Simon. Like,
there's,
there he is.
There he is.
Simon Le Bon, and there's this little Duran.
In his glory.
And this little, and this page comes in, and she was a little not so smart. So she walks in, and she's like, oh. And she sees what we're doing, and sorry. She didn't have to say. And then he said, it's okay, like, for her to come in. She's like, no, I don't need to come in.
Did she know you were a masseuse, or did she think the two of you were having sex?
I don't know. I was fully clothed, but I don't think she really wasn't all there all the time.
Wow. Well, no, I figured as much. As a masseuse, you don't take your clothes off.
The reflex is lonely.
Well, we hope there was no reflex.
So then he even said he's only spent a very little time with her that I know of. She closes the door, and he says, I said, oh, well, she was a little nervous. And he said, I think she's just not all that smart.
Wow. Very perceptive.
She's not that all there. Like, it's okay.
And for people who wonder about show business at the highest level, the people that you would expect to be the nicest people are the nicest people, right? Tom Hanks, people like that.
Yeah, those people are really nice. And like Tom Cruise, so nice. Tom Cruise, we weren't allowed to get autographs or take pictures, so I never wanted to get in trouble. But one producer really wanted to produce a picture or an autograph. And I said, I'll run outside and do it. Just pretend like I'll fit in the crowd, whatever. So I run out there, and Tom Cruise, very nice. Like, he gets there early to take pictures of people and autographs. So he looks at me after I asked for the autograph, and he said, would you like a picture? And I said, no, thanks. And he was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because he doesn't get that very often. Yeah. Listen, I know, being a Chicago girl, you lost your dad recently.
Yes.
Condolences on that.
Thank you.
And I know what a big GN fan he was. He loved this radio station.
He loved you.
Yeah, well, that's nice of you to say. but he also loved this radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to give you a chance to say something about your dad.
Oh, you're so sweet. I love my daddy. My favorite thing in the whole world is being his daughter.
Isn't that nice?
That's very sweet.
One of the writers of the show actually heard me say that, and he runs over and he's like, Renee, did I just hear you say that? I said, yeah. And he said, my kids would never say that about me. I'm like, really? Why not? And he's like, I don't know.
Which writer was it? Because it's probably true.
The mole. It was the mole.
It was the mole.
When I was little, my father would often have me stay home, like spend time with him. But my mom was a Chicago's public school teacher, so it wasn't okay to ditch school.
Right.
So we would pretend like I'm getting up in the morning, and then she would go to work, and then he'd say, okay, go back to bed. So I get like another 5-10 minutes. All right. So then we spend the whole day together. We go to the track. We go to McDonald's. We did all these great things. It was so much
fun. How great is that? Just as long as you never told mom.
No, we never told. So this is what we did. So then we had to write the note for school before she came home. So he would say to me, now listen, what do you want? Do you want a headache, a stomachache, or a sore throat? And I was like, I'll take a headache. And he said, okay. So if I write headache on this note, and they ask you tomorrow, the teacher says, Renee, why weren't you in school yesterday? You have to say headache. You can't say stomachache.
Right.
Because then our stories don't match. And
commit
then,
to the lie.
I'm going to go to jail. And I was like, what? You're going to go to jail? And he said, yeah, because you're supposed to be in school. I'm like, okay. So that's what we would do. And then on the way to school, he would test me. Now, why weren't you in school yesterday?
Right.
I'm like, stomachache. He's like, headache. We wrote headache.
Right.
Honestly, you had to say headache. So when your friends ask you, the teacher overhears you, you have to say headache.
Well, in the tradition of true criminals, he committed to the crime.
But Mrs. Really Smith, did. We were handicapping.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, your dad took you to the track.
No.
Yeah, never.
A little bit.
Not that one time. Hang around a second. 9:31. We'll come back with a big story in a second on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
I don't know. Orion will be here in just a second. I don't know if we have time to get to this story, but it's important news, and it's been brushed aside by all the other news of the day. KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, is coming out with a suntan lotion that smells like fried chicken.
No.
Yeah. Renee, did you hear about this?
No, this first time.
Yeah.
First time
here. We're breaking news here. Breaking news. breaking news. Don't you love her laugh?
I do. Laugh is fantastic.
The suntan lotion, the suntan oil that you put on it, I don't know what they're charging for it, but it smells like fried chicken. Couldn't you just take a bucket of chicken and just rub it on you?
Finger looking good, right?
I mean, you know, you're going to get a nice level of candle.
That's funny.
Yeah, well, thank
Renee.
You. Thank you,
Renee.
Tell Jack, call him.
Finger licking good.
Finger licking good. That's exactly
thank
right.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
Yeah, try the veal. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10, and this is it. Orion's on the way down? Yes, Orion will be here in just a second. We were talking to my friend, Renee. Renee was on the Tonight Show staff for 15 years. Mm-hmm. After she interned with me. So anybody that interns on this show, you should meet Bennett. Is Bennett here? Bennett, come on out for a second. Bennett technically isn't an intern. He's a paid staff member.
Oh,
but
nice.
This is the closest
Hi,
position we have to intern.
Nice.
Bennett, I don't know what you want to do in show business, but Renee is worth millions. Because
wow.
of her association with me.
She owns property. She's a real estate mogul.
I better go start working for Renee.
Yeah, you're going to work for Renee.
I'm going to drop you like it's hot. I'm just going to jump over with Renee.
Yeah, that's a pretty good call, actually, now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the start, Steve. That was great. Okay.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, yeah, Dave and I are going to go work for Renee,
actually,
too.
Yeah, actually, I think we're all going.
You're all going to Renee? Renee Co. Renee Incorporated. Hey, I was going to ask you, in lieu of all until Orion gets here. Here he comes now. The knuckleheads that are running for president. You must have met both of them when they came through.
No.
Trump must have been on the show.
Trump's been on the show, but it was before he was running.
Yeah, you met him back then.
I didn't meet him, but I knew he was around.
So you really didn't go out of your way to say hi, Donnie J? How about Hillary? Did you meet Hillary?
Yeah, for sure. And her people were really nice. And I remember I had a Time magazine at my desk, and we weren't allowed to ask for autographs or anything. But the guy working for her was like, hey, do you want that signed? I'm like, I couldn't say this. He's like, I'll get a sign for you. I'm like, are you sure?
They wanted the photo op.
No, I wasn't. I couldn't go downstairs. Remember? I said no to Tom Cruise.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. No pictures.
I don't do pictures.
No pictures. Well, it's great to have you here. Stand by 1 second here as we shift gears for Mr. Samuelson. Hi, Big O.
Good morning.
Thanks again for having us Saturday at Arlington.
It was a lot of fun, and I know you all made a lot of money. I didn't, but I know all of you did.
Actually, when you say we, are you including me in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because my horse is still running.
Really?
Yeah, from Saturday. Yeah, yeah.
It'll probably make it to Wisconsin by the weekend.
No, still on the track.
Still on the track. Okay.
Had an attention problem. Yeah. Did you see at one point? Pardon me, I'm choking to death. My horse stopped to check the mail.
Yeah, we were joking with Steve earlier in the week, Orion, saying that he dropped so much money there, they're going to resurface the whole parking lot and just call it Cochran Parking Lot C. Is that what they were going to?
Yeah, this parking lot resurfaced by Steve Cochran's losing.
Yeah, well, that's typical of Mr. D, naming things after important people.
Part of the problem was the horses I picked. Like, I picked a horse called No Shot in Hell. I mean, that seems like that's pretty obvious. That horse is.
Don't you wonder who comes up with the names of racehorses? There are some very clever names, and you haven't got the foggiest idea why they named them that.
Somebody asked you Saturday, how come you don't own a horse?
Why don't I own a horse? Yeah.
Never even considered
it. It's a money pit.
Yeah, it's tough, right? It's tough.
Yeah, we had a team of horses on the farm. I didn't like them. They didn't like me. And so to me, the only place for horses is on a racetrack.
You love watching the thoroughbreds.
Oh, I love the racetrack. Yeah.
And it is an ag business.
Absolutely. 35,000 people in the state of Illinois make their living because of producing hay and feed. Thoroughbred farms and breeding horses and all that sort of thing. So,
somebody else, switching gears for a second, somebody else asked me about food prices as we wrap up the summer and head into the fall sooner than later. What are we looking at the grocery store because of this abundant crop? Are prices going to drop?
Yes, they already have, and they'll probably be dropping just a little bit more because the cattle prices are down rather sharply. Hog prices are going down, so you're end of the summer grilling season should be a little cheaper. And then I think we'll see that go into the holiday season as well. Meanwhile, it adds challenges to farmers and to agribusiness companies. Next week, we'll spend 3 days in Boone, Iowa at the Farm Progress Show, and it'll be interesting to see if they're just going to kick tires or maybe buy something.
Orion, how about the pumpkin crop this year?
Good pumpkin crop that's coming in, and it'll be ready. Sycamore will have its pumpkin festival, and all of the farm market gardens will have their festivals for Halloween. Yeah, we've got a good pumpkin. And Illinois is the biggest producer of pumpkins.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I guess I turn my own microphone on when I talk. Is that how this works?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Renee worked for me at the Loop and is visiting her mom and her family here. Mm-hmm. Did you ever spend time listening to Mr. Samuelson when you were growing up in Chicago?
I don't know. I think I do remember.
So
you may
have
flipped across the dial, but got off it quickly.
Yeah. Do you have any questions about the farm? Do you have any questions about the farm or anything?
So you grew up on a farm.
Grew up on a farm, milked cows.
And chickens?
Got up, we had chickens.
Oh, I have a
producer
question.
Producer Renee.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second. You milk chickens?
No, she said, did you have chickens?
Oh.
And I said, yes.
But you were talking about milking cows. I thought you were milking chickens.
No,
what
no,
was
no,
going
no.
on that farm?
No, no, no.
I do have a question. What is the difference, or why does it taste better, or is it just because chemicals? The farm-based eggs rather than the store-bought eggs?
Well, it's not always the case, but store-bought eggs have been in storage for a while. When you get them off the farm, they are as fresh as they can be. And I think that's basically the difference.
Yeah. Oh.
Because we're able to store eggs 2 to 3 weeks, and, you know, they're just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing wrong with them, but they tend to lose maybe a little bit of flavor.
So, yeah, I've noticed the difference.
So
plus,
you love the
a lot
farm
of
eggs?
It is in your brain.
I've always wondered that.
Orion loved fresh eggs. When he was a kid, he would follow the chickens around with his hands cut
and
behind
catch
him. He was just waiting for the eggs to fall.
And I would catch them. Yeah.
Tell everybody what you did with it when it got boring on the farm. This is before the internet, kids. When it got boring on the farm with the milking of the cows and the cats, the barn cats.
No. Well, when we had to milk cows by hand because we did not have electricity until I was 14.
Wow.
And so we'd have 12, 14 cats in the barn. And the reason farmers have a lot of cats is they're great at controlling mice and that sort of thing. And so they live in the barn and do that. But we taught them to stand on their hind legs, and I'd squirt milk in their mouth right from the teat.
No.
Yeah. And they'd come and stand on their hind legs.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you had that on video? That would be unbelievable.
You never better know what happens in those barns.
Better than sitting watching television, I'll tell you, or video games.
Or playing Pokemon.
It's unbelievable. It seems like
finding
Dave.
The cat.
Be Dave. Great if Dave called that as an event.
I think I did that, didn't I?
Yes,
when
you
were big old.
We had
he
a squeeze.
He shoots. Oh, yeah. Just wide.
We did it on at Wrigley Field.
Get her done.
That's right. Yeah. Ah, that's fantastic.
I just heard him say, get her done. That's great.
The great thing about Renee is when she drinks, she laughs less. It's 9:51. Bill and Wendy coming up. Nice to see you.
Okay.
On 720 WGN.